So a funny thing happened last week. Sometimes you just have to laugh at stuff because you know it's from God. I get back and after we were done with the service, I checked my phone because I don't have my phone up here. And I checked my phone and there was like a bunch of texts saying, hey, something went wrong with the stream and it cut off and everything wasn't working. My wife's telling me this and I'm like, okay, it happens, you know. But then I thought, but you know what? It's okay. We'll go get the recording, and I put online, and the recording didn't work, right? So then I said, well, at least I'll get the audio because, you know, I always record the audio. And then I get over to the house, and I realize the CD was broken. And it reminded me of the passage because I was actually reading it where Jesus, after he heals people, sometimes God's like, nope, you know what? I didn't want anybody to hear that. Don't go tell everybody. And I thought maybe this was one of those sermons, right? Maybe this is just one of those where it was just for the handful of people who were here. So I apologize to everybody who didn't get to hear last week, but maybe I'll do it again some other time. But it wasn't for you to hear. So everybody who was here last week, do what Jesus said. Don't go telling everybody. It was just for you, all right? Don't run into the town. But, you know, the other thing that was interesting that happened this week, And I am making sure that we're recording and everything is going right. But a lot of times in preparing lessons and putting together series, you will have something in mind. There's a maybe a finer point that you want to get across. And I've often shared how God always manages to give me some real life example in my own life of how this works. And this week, it was my own kids. Now, this wasn't the first time this happened because my kids are always teaching me life lessons. But sometimes you really have to pay attention, and I was kind of convicted. I was a little bit challenged as I was watching my kids, and I'm going to share this example here in a few minutes about something my kids did that relates to what we're going to look at today. Because when we think about not only the times that we're in right now, but when we think about how, you know, actually next Sunday will be the last Sunday before we actually reach Christmas. And as fast as this year is gone, it's like, I'm still kind of like, speed up, you know, like, put your foot on the gas. Like, I know you're going 75, go a little faster, right? Get this year over with. And I'm anticipating 2021, and I'm thinking, come on now. God, there's got to be some hope. There's got to be relief in sight. But a lot of times when we're stressed and we're struggling and we're under pressure, our nerves are bad, we're feeling anxious, we're really facing some difficult challenges, sometimes we're not always conscious and aware, or maybe we are and we just don't care, of our own behavior, how we treat others. Typically Christmas, right around Thanksgiving, after Thanksgiving, after the Black Friday sales are over, people get a little bit nicer. You know, they'll let you cut in sometimes, and then they're not fighting over parking spaces. This year, it's a little different. People are just kind of like, eh, no, it's 2020. I'm not going to be nice. No, you're not getting in front of me. I saw somebody fighting, and we were at Walmart to pick up a couple of things for dinner, and my daughter and I were in there, Kendall and I, and we're standing in line, and they were fighting over the self-checkout, like who was there first, and I thought, it's a self-checkout. Like, you know, wait for the next. Like, seriously, you know how it is with the self-checkout. Walmart's been pretty good since they don't have to hire any humans. They got all eight of them open, right, as much as they can. And the only thing the person does is say cash only or card only or whatever it is. But it was funny because they were fighting over it. And while they were fighting over who got to that self-checkout first, two of them on the other side right behind them opened up. And Kendall's like, so we're going to go over there or? We're going to wait. I'm like, I don't know these people, so we're just going to go over it. But it's amazing how we can kind of forget not just our own behavior and the fact that we're fighting over things that are kind of trivial and they don't matter, but sometimes we can lose sight of the fact that there are underlying reasons why that person may be stressed out. And you kind of think, you know, and I told Kendall and I tell Williams all the time, like, sometimes you see people, maybe they're being mean. Maybe they're suffering. Maybe they're angry. Maybe they're sad, and you just have to let them have it. Somebody cut us off in traffic, and William was like, you're not going to speed up? I said, no, son. It's dark. It's not worth it. We're not in any particular hurry. Where are we going? I mean, it's quarantine. Like, where are we going to go? We're going to go right back home and watch some reruns of something on Netflix, right? And we forget the stress that people are under. And sometimes, you know what? Just let them have it. But when we think about how this relates to us being Christians, our behavior, when we look at how we imitate Christ, sometimes it goes back to this time of year, because I think of how, and I've shared this before, during the holidays when we visit family, when we talk to people, we make those phone calls, when we, you know, have meals together, we can be with that brother or that sibling or that son or daughter who just, it's like year after year, Christmas after Christmas, you know they're going to get on your nerves. You know they're going to do something that's going to be upsetting. They're going to jab at you. They're going to bring up that painful memory. You think, why would they do it? And what does our response need to be to people who maybe we don't necessarily feel like showing them the love of Christ? My kids have been really into chores, and I got them something called the Green Light card. It's a card that you get for kids. It's like a little debit card. And this way, when they get their chores, you know, their money will come on the Green Light card. And they'll be able to buy their own games and spend it at the store, because my son figured out very quickly what my daughter hasn't figured out, because I've been nice to her. He figured out that if I'm going to spend $30 on this game, that's coming out of my money, right? And so then he automatically knows, well, that means I got $30 less. Now they'll have a car, and he can go check his own balance, and he can see, ooh, man, I don't have it. But Linda's like, man, I could use $30. Can I work at your house? Can I get an allowance, right? I bring this up because sometimes when we think of our behavior, we can lose sight of the fact that our behavior, us acting as Christ did, the many blessings that we have in life, it isn't just God being some magic genie. It isn't him just giving us stuff. It's kind of like how the kids, they have to understand it. Yeah, I got to clean up my room, and I got to take that laundry downstairs, and I got to take the trash out. I have chores, and I earn an allowance. Do we understand that the allowance is based on your behavior and it's based on how you behave? So the title of the lesson today is Chores and Allowances. Very simple, because we can understand this with little kids and how, you know, kids and their behavior and how they act and what they do. We can see it with little kids, but do we see it with us as Christians? Because sometimes we can have an entitled attitude. We can have expectations of God, but we lose sight of the expectations that God has of us. This is chores, and I saw this picture, and I thought, oh, isn't that beautiful? Isn't that special, right? Mom there vacuuming and kids putting up their toys and putting them in nice little neat little bins. It never works out that way. Because there's always, like, seriously, I didn't know this until I had my own kids. I mean, I guess I kind of realized it because I have three sisters. But there's always one sibling who's very neat and tidy and takes care of things. And then there's always the one who's like, whatever, I'll wait until Mama cracks the whip. And then maybe I'll cry. Maybe I'll pick up something, right? Because we ideally, this is what we would like cleaning up around the house to look like. Typically, this is a Saturday for us. We've skipped a couple Saturdays. We haven't gone through this. But she's right. The thing is, this is what we would like it to look like. But actually, it looks kind of like this. This is a book. And it was interesting. I saw this. There's a book called Brother Messy, Brother Neat. And it's actually a book that gets read, and it is teaching kids that they've started this, become really popular because now that people are doing distant learning, kids who are learning how to read, it goes through and people read this book to them while they're flipping the page and they're showing the images. But it chronicles this messy brother and this clean brother. And, you know, it was an interesting story that I'll tell you about William and Kendall here in just a minute. But when we think about the clean brother and the messy brother, the story is kind of self-explanatory, right? One of them wants to clean up and do right because he wants to be obedient to his parents. The other one just wants to have fun. And they're at odds. They're clashing over this. Because, you know, it's like, why should I have to clean up? And why should I have to do what I'm told? And he never does it. As Christians, do we examine ourselves and compare ourselves to our brothers? Or is our motivation to please God? Do we do enough self-examination and comparing ourselves to the expectations of living up to being like Christ? Or are we only concerned about what our brother or our sister is doing? Are we the clean brother or are we the messy brother? And does it even matter? And so I want to start by looking at Matthew chapter 21. In verse 28, it says, "What do you think? There was a man who had two sons. He went to the first and said, 'Son, go and work today in the vineyard.' 'I will not,' he answered. But later he changed his mind and went. Then the father went to the other son and said the same thing. He answered, 'I will, sir,' but he did not go. Which of the two did what the father wanted? 'The first,' they answered. Jesus said to them, 'Truly, I tell you, the tax collectors and the prostitutes are entering the kingdom of God ahead of you. For John came to you to show you the way of righteousness, and you did not believe him, but the tax collectors and the prostitutes did. And even after you saw this, you did not repent and believe him.'" He's talking, when he says John, he's talking about John the Baptist. John the Baptist came to prepare the way. He said, "Listen, this isn't just a matter of behavior and following the law, but this is a matter of the heart. This is a matter of repentance. This is a matter of turning our hearts over to God." And he's saying, you rejected this to the point that the tax collectors and prostitutes, he's saying even the people of the lowest ethical and moral fiber are entering the kingdom ahead of you. You who follow all the rules, you who do everything according to the law, you who feel very self-confident and self-righteous. And he's pointing this out, and he gives this example of the one son who says, "Yeah, I'm going to do it," but then he doesn't. And the one who initially says, "No, I'm not going to be bothered with this. No, I'm not going to do what you say." But what happens to that son? What happens to both of these sons? Both of them had a change of heart. What's required of us as Christians and what we have to do in order to really be prepared for what God is taking us into right now, and each of us in a different way, let's face it, everybody's siblings aren't the same, everybody's family not the same, everybody's neighborhood and work environment, we've all got something different going on in our lives, but the one consistent thing that we see is that we all have to be willing to have a change of heart. A change of heart towards people. A change of heart not just towards people, but why that change of heart? Because we understand why we're doing it. They're doing it for the Father. Our righteousness is defined by our willingness to deny ourselves and obey. You know, and on the surface here, it may not seem like it's just a matter of self-denial and obedience, but I'll share this story. Something happened, and to be fair, before I go into this story, this is not an indictment on just Kendall. Okay, let's be clear here, because William does the same thing, and I'm sure some of you in an honest moment, you've probably done this too, but I saved Kendall's life a few days ago. I literally saved her life. You'll understand this in just a second. Kendall is in the house with all of us as we've been for the last 9-10 months. And Kendall has to pick up some stuff. And in this example of the, you know, clean brother, messy brother, Kendall is the messy one. Let's make that clear, okay? William is very neat and tidy, and he makes sure that he's very meticulous. Kendall, not so much. Kendall is this great artist. Now she's getting into her art, and she's drawing, and she's painting, and so she's got papers everywhere, And she's the kind of person that kicks her shoes off and her coat and everything's right there in the middle of the floor. And so what happens is Kendall was actually having a good day. It was semi-clean in the house. And Sharice asked her to pick up something, I believe it was. And Kendall said, well, that's not my stuff. That's not mine. That's you know, why should I have to pick it up? And Sharice responds with something along the lines of, well, I'm the mama, and I told you to, right? Because I asked you to. And that, you know, we understand, most of us who are parents, and, you know, we understand that that should be good enough. So Kendall then, in her youth, responds to her mother with something along the lines of, well, then why don't you go pick it up? Yes. See, I told you, I actually saved my daughter's life. Because it was that close, right? And to my wife's credit, she kind of responded with a moment of pause. She's in that valley of indecision, like, I could, you know, I could end her life here now, or I could go breathe, right? And so she chose to take a breath. She chose to, she made the right choice. Now, I share that example because, again, I did save my daughter's life, and we talked it out, and I pulled my daughter aside. Typically, I'm the kind of parent where I'm like, you know what? I let the kids and Sharice, I let them kind of work it out. I'm not that, you know, interventionist unless it gets really bad. But this particular time, I felt like, no, I need to get in, I need to get involved in it. So I waited until everything kind of calmed down, let my wife kind of, you know, get her chi back, and then I take Kendall, this was sometime later, and I explain to her how hurtful what she said was. I explain to her how disrespectful what she said to her mother was. Not because she said it, even if that's how she felt like, well, why should I have to do it? Let's face it, that's not just something that a kid does. We often feel like that. But I was pointing out to her, that's your mother. Do you realize how many times your mother cleans up behind you? Like, we give you chores, we give you things to do, but in actuality, you don't clean up this house. You don't keep the wheels on the bus rolling. You don't keep things in motion here. Your mom cleans up behind all of us. You just walk in there and see some laundry, and it's like, hey, pick up, you know, put your laundry up, and you're like, oh my gosh. You didn't have to do the 7 or 8 loads of clothes. You didn't lug those laundry baskets up and down those stairs. You didn't fold anything. You didn't press anything. You didn't rub the stains out. You didn't cook anything. You basically did nothing. We're giving you an allowance and chore because we want you to understand these principles. And what you said was not only disrespectful and it came from a bad place, but it was very hurtful because of how much your mother does for you. And we look at that and we think, oh, man, how could Kendall do something like that? But ask yourself, what does God ask of you to do for your brothers and sisters? How often do you look at your brothers and sisters and God wants you to do something? And you say, but that's not my problem. That's not for me to do. They don't appreciate it. People think, you know, they may not say it in these words, but oftentimes they can take the attitude of, well, if God, he's all powerful and he's created the universe, if he wants to clean up this person's life, if he wants to, if he wants them to have a job, if he wants them to get their marriage together, if he wants them to be able to feed themselves, why doesn't God just do it? Why is he asking me to get involved? God, go do it yourself. Why can't you fix it, God? You see, nobody would ever say it in such a way that it may come out that way. We may not think of it that way, but it's just like I shared about Kendall. As disrespectful in that moment that she was, as much as she was very myopic and she could only see herself and what she wanted or what she didn't want to do, we have to ask ourselves, when we're dealing with the person who's troubled, who's sick, who is needy, and they're constantly needy, You know, just like I was sharing about my wife and how she picks up around the house for the kids, how she cleans up. See, what happens is just like my kids don't know how much time I spend working to fix things for them, how much sacrifice I make to make sure that they have what they need. Sometimes we're so myopic, we lose sight of how much God sacrifices for us. And then when God says, hey, I want you to go help that person, I want you to reach out and call that person or see if there's anything you can do for them or deal with that troubled brother or sister, we just kind of, oh my gosh, this is so much of a challenge. I can't believe God keeps asking me to deal with this person or this population or this group or this thing. Why can't they just go do it themselves? They're capable. Why don't they go fix it? And what God is asking us to do is to examine our hearts. Consider how we look at our brothers and sisters, not just from the perspective of them being our brothers and sisters, but because they are God's child. And we do it for him. What is our motivation? What gives us the incentive? What gives us the drive? What gets us up in the morning? What gives us the strength, the patience to deal with people who are difficult to deal with? What keeps us coming back? Maybe a better question is, where has our motivation stalled at? Have we gotten to a place where, well, you know what, we've just given up. We don't even want the motivation to deal with the sick and the poor and those who have really deep challenges. Is our motivation to please God? Or is it because we want a reward? You know, when we do chores and allowances, it's not just because we want to get something. It's not because that's how we're being taught. When we're blessed in our lives, when we have our houses and our nice warm, you know, rooms and we've got our nice cars and we've got our good jobs and our pensions and our retirement, when we have these things, these are kind of like getting an allowance. These are the blessings of life that God has given so many of us, even if it's just our health. But do we understand the concept that God is trying to teach us through the many blessings that we have? Are we willing to share those things? I found this to actually be hilarious. Those of you who can't read this or you're at home, it says that moment when having children starts to pay off. Clearly this man has sat down and didn't have any toilet paper. And he says, hey, daughter, run grab me some, right? You know, and it's funny because you laugh, but, you know, we've all been there. And it's like kids, it's like, hey, help me out. Mine isn't the toilet paper thing. My thing is, I love it when I sit down now and I can say, hey, William, come here. And he comes in the room. He's all excited. What is it, Dad? I'm like, go hand me the remote. Right? And he kind of looks at me. I mean, he's all too happy to do it. And it's not that I'm not capable of getting my big self up and going and getting the remote, but the fact is, it's kind of nice having kids to help you out and take care of some of those chores. But do we really understand that it isn't that God needs us to do these things, but that it brings him joy that we're willing to do those things for him, that we're willing to be his surrogates, that we're willing to represent him, that we're willing to serve others that way, that we respect and appreciate how much had to be sacrificed and given for us because of our selfishness, our sin, our laziness, our lust, the things that keep us away from being like Christ, the things that keep us held down, that there was a sacrifice that had to be made. Somebody, and I love how Dennis, when he shared that during the Lord's Supper today, we think about there's a sacrifice that had to be made. And much like Dennis shared this morning, sometimes we don't really understand it. The kids won't understand until they have their own kids in many ways. How much their mother does for them. How much that I do for them. Do we really appreciate how much God does for us? Do we want to make our Father proud? Because at the end of the day, it's not that I need my son to get the remote. It's not that I need my daughter to necessarily pick up her shoes or pick up her art supplies or do these things. I can do it. Matter of fact, if you want to be honest, you know, my wife is better at this than I am. Sometimes I actually want everybody to get out of the house, and I want to do it myself because I do it faster and I feel like I do it better, and that way I know it'll be done right. But my wife, she's very much, no, they need to understand how. They need to be able to participate so they can appreciate it. There's nothing like the proud look on my kids' face when they've accomplished something and they see that myself, my wife, that my parents and her parents, that their family is proud of them. Do we do things for the right motivation? Do we do things because we want to honor God and we want to make him proud? Or are we too consumed on the fact that, well, it's not my stuff, and it's not my responsibility. And why is that my concern? What motivates us to live the way that Christ lived? I'll finish it out here. Matthew 25, starting verse 31, it says, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right hand and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire, prepare for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison and you did not look after me. They also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or sick or in prison and did not help you? He replied, truly I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. Then they will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. This kind of brings it all into focus when we think about how it is that we are to treat our brothers and sisters. In some cases, our own actual sibling from our family. The challenge is not to qualify and quantify and somehow decide whether or not they are worthy, as sometimes we can be tempted to do. Well, I'm tired of helping them out with food. I'm tired of giving them money. I'm tired of serving them in some kind of way. I'm tired of sacrificing for them. This example that we see here that Christ is giving is so very appropriate. We have to remember that we're doing it for him. Just like I shared. When I tell Kendall, go pick up those shoes and move them over there. She said, but those are William's shoes, or those are Mama's shoes, or those are your shoes. And I said, but do it anyway. Do it for me. This is the attitude that we have to embrace. Because let's face it, nobody's worthy There's nobody out there that's worthy of our time and investment and sacrifice. None of us are even worthy. We're doing it to imitate Christ. We're doing it to please our Father. The evidence of our faith is shown in how we treat others without qualification. You know, I stress that without qualification part there, because that's, frankly, what so many of us, especially those of us who are Christians who may be struggling with this time, feel like, well, I just don't want to. It's difficult. It's a challenge to want to give to people who hurt me. It's a challenge to want to sacrifice. It's a challenge to want to do this. And yet we understand that the very principle of being a Christian, following Christ, is that somebody died for us, that somebody sacrificed for us and gave, even when we didn't know just how lost we were. Even while we were still in dark, before we even knew that we needed God, somebody was willing to die for us. Do we have an appreciation for that? Do we understand that that's why we give? I was so encouraged. I got a call from Miss Pat because Lay's Bible class, they wanted to give to a family. And those types of things always encourage me, because sometimes we can get to that place where it's like, well, you know what? And my dad and I, we were talking about this the other day, and he's funny. He's like, you know, it's good having kids that are all adults now, because I don't have to do the whole Christmas thing anymore. I don't have to worry about, oh, we got to make sure they get this so they don't feel left out, and I don't want this one to get too much. He said, I don't even care anymore. I just send everybody a few dollars and be done with it. He said, but the grandkids is different, right? It's exciting for the grandkids. Now, I really want to, he's like, I want to make sure they get what they want. But the kids, I don't care about y'all, right? He's like, I'll just send you a check. All you care about is money anyway. If I buy anything, you're just going to want the receipt so you can take it back and get what you wanted. The thing is, sometimes we can have that attitude of, well, it's not my kids, and I don't have to worry about Christmas. But I appreciated the fact that the ladies, they wanted to give to a family who actually needed something. Even though they're not sitting at home worried about, you know, opening up presents on Christmas, they understand that there are some children out there, there are some families out there who it matters to them. It makes a difference to them. There's a lot of people out here who are hurting, especially right now, the way the economy is, the way that businesses are, the way that things are so sluggish. There are people out of work. There are people who are having cutbacks. Do we look and understand that that's who Jesus was talking about? Sure, you don't need a toy. You don't care about a remote control car. Your bills are paid. You're not worried. Every time I get a letter from the city of Dover, they take it out of auto pay, so I just look at it and see the amount. But I am fortunate and blessed enough that I have enough. So I don't worry about the city of Dover sending me a letter anymore, because I know they're just paid. But are you concerned about your neighbor and someone else who maybe they're struggling to pay that bill? They're struggling to pay their rent or their mortgage. Do you have the type of concern that Christ has for those people? Because for all of our holy living, and notice how he says in here, he calls them the righteous. They consider themselves righteous because they're following the laws, but their hearts aren't in it. What are we going to do to reflect Christ in the way that we love other people for him? A few questions we want to end with here. Do I rely on obedience to God's instructions for me as a measure of where I am spiritually more than how I feel in the moment? You know, this is really important, because let's face it, sometimes we just don't feel like it. Sometimes we just don't, you know, forget serving other people. Sometimes we just don't feel like getting out of bed. Sometimes we just don't feel like, you know, doing the basic stuff. Sometimes we just don't feel like it, and yet you understand that even when you don't feel like it, I still have to get up and go to work, or I'm going to lose my job. Well, I don't feel like taking a dog for a walk. I don't feel like feeding the kids. Sometimes I don't feel like eating myself. Well, guess what? If I don't feel like eating, you know what happens to people that don't feel like eating or don't feel like feeding their children? They die of starvation. You can't go based on your feelings all the time. Sometimes you have to do what is right. You have to be obedient. Do we rely just on how we feel? Because if that's the case, I have news for you. And I've shared this in the past. I don't always like everybody. In fact, I'm kind of a Grinch. My daughter's been drawing these pictures of the Grinch. She's been, and I've been posting them online. They're great. She's becoming a great artist. She's doing the Grinch. Here's the thing. I'm kind of the Grinch. But that's why I have to deny myself. That's why I have to be somebody who doesn't allow my feelings to overwhelm me to a place where I don't see that I have to be obedient to God. Do we rely on obedience to his instructions or just on how we feel? Am I quicker to qualify a person's worthiness of my support or assistance than I am to consider my responsibility to help? Simply put, do I concern myself more with the person or the situation I am and whether or not they are qualified for my sacrifice or giving? Or do I really first consider, why did God put me with this person? Why did God put me in this place? Sometimes we can be in a situation where it's like, why am I constantly around all these needy people? Why does it seem like every day I'm surrounded by people who always, it feels like my phone, every time it rings, it's somebody who needs something. And we can get exacerbated, we can get frustrated, we can get exhausted with feeling like there's always somebody around me with their hand up. They need something. And we lose sight of the fact that God is sending them to you. There's a reason why God is sending them to you. Do we fall on our knees and ask ourselves the question and ask God, help me understand why it's always the same type of person? You know, maybe for you it's like, you know, the person always seems to find somebody who needs some food. There's always somebody hungry. And somebody else might think, I never get hungry people to come up to me. Well, there's a reason for that. It's not just that person being qualified and whether they meet the standards of your sacrifice and being worthy of your sacrifice, but do you meet the qualifications that God has set out for you to be able to provide those needs? See, God can do it any way he wants to. That's what's so beautiful about Jesus when we see the miracles. You know, Jesus is like, hey, I can turn water into wine. I can, you know, feed thousands of people with 2 fish and 5 loaves of bread. I don't actually need you. Just like I don't really need my kids to pick up to clean the house. But I'm asking you to do it. I'm trying to teach you something in this. What are we learning when people around us are in need? What are we learning about ourselves? How do we take that responsibility to heart? What individual or group is hardest for me to have an affinity for and why? What characteristic of Christ do I need to imitate more in order to love those people in the same way that he did? I raise this because, let's face it, some people are easier to serve than others. Some people are easier to give to than others. Some, even if maybe we don't like them or we don't really embrace them, you know, we can kind of understand it. We can kind of get it. But then there's that person or that group where it seems like it's always the same thing. I'm reminded of how Christ, you know, tells them, you know, the poor will always be among you. Says, you know, there's always going to be those people who are poor that are among you. That we can't lose sight of the fact that that's not going to change. Now, he was talking in a different context, but it rings true here. There's always going to be a need. There's always going to be somebody who has a health problem that's going to need some assistance. Is it difficult for you to embrace that crowd, that individual? Well, this person, they have a drug problem, or this person, they have a drinking problem, or this person, they have a weight problem, or this person, they have chronic illnesses, or they're not particularly strong when it comes to their finances, and they're always needing a little bit of help and some, you know, supplement financially, like, and you get exhausted with it. It's hard for you to embrace that person or that group or those people. And what we have to ask ourselves is, in our hearts, why is it that Christ was able to embrace them? Why is it that Christ was able to embrace the prostitutes and the tax collectors and the sinners? Why is it something that he could do but something that was difficult for us? Are we checking our hearts when we find it difficult to love and embrace all of God's children? And what do we need to do to imitate Christ, to be more like him? And finally, how easily do I recognize opportunities to love others? What can I change functionally or behaviorally to become more aware? You know, I bring this up because it's one thing to say, hey, you need to pick up the shoes or the clothes or the coat or the socks or whatever it is. It's another thing when days go by and you walk past that same pair of socks on the floor. There's nothing that grinds my gears more than when I walk in my son's room and he's got pants that are literally standing up on their own. And he has walked not just past them, he's walked around them. He steps over them. He sits in his chair. He'll back up, and it's like he's got the rolling wheels on. He'll back up his chair, and it's like, oh, there's pants on the floor. He won't pick the pants up, though. He'll just move the chair to go around. And we chuckle at that, but sometimes we will see there will be obvious needs right in our face. Our coworker, I'm so inspired, and he probably won't want me to share this. I'm going to do it anyway. He'll text me. But I'm so inspired. I was listening to Steve, and he's talked about this in the past. Steve Hawkins, he was talking about how he's got coworkers. And I'm inspired when he talks about his coworkers and how oftentimes they will need prayer. Many of us, we do that. Linda, different ones, you know. Okay, we'll bring up people that we work with who need prayer. But he was sharing a particular story about a gentleman who was going through a challenge with his son and his grandson. And how not only is it, hey, we as a church, we want to pray for him, and we want to do whatever we can to, you know, help him and keep him on our hearts, but especially the fact that Steve is willing to take the time to talk to him, take the time to pray with him, take the time to follow up with him and say, how are you doing? See, that's an opportunity for Steve to be like Christ. It's an opportunity for him to reflect the love of Christ. He's not thumping the Bible and giving him a bunch of scriptures. He is literally imitating Christ in his compassion for somebody who's hurting. Because, see, it's easy. Steve could go in there and get his project done and go home. That's not his problem. That's not his concern. But he cares enough and has enough compassion to invest in this man. Are we recognizing those opportunities when they come up? This Christmas, when you're with your family, when you're doing your Zoomies, when you get together for your meals and gatherings, are you going to be of Christ in such a way that you recognize those opportunities to do the things that God wants us to do to honor him and make him proud?